You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So I'm looking at something on KenPom called Program Ratings. I haven't seen this page before. But it has, since the beginning of KenPom, which teams are like the best average rating. So like Duke, number one, obviously, right? Kentucky, number two, Kansas, three, whatever. This is since 1997. Auburn is 54th, which I have to imagine at like 5 years ago probably was below 100. But I'm seeing UConn on here, which... One, I didn't realize they had four titles since
the Jim Calhoun era.
Yeah.
In that time, UConn has never reached number one in KenPom. Their highest rating is number two in 09.
That's funny.
Hit the theme, Jack.
Run like a wild man.
I watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels.
The winner is from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Jaren Harris Stadium time is 9:31 p.m. Central Standard Time. Your digital audio device is tuned into the Orange and True podcast, harbored by your friendly folks at collegemagnolia.com. Check out their website for all the Auburn sports news you can handle. Greetings and salutations, Orange and True Thursday's Eye. Senator Crow 2 on Twitter, at Senator Crow on Venmo. Send me all your coins, your Bitcoins, your Doge coins, your Bruce coins. We're starting Bruce coins, right?
That's what these memes, we're going to NFT these memes that we do after the games.
Let's NFT the S out of these memes. Speaking of which, the voice you just heard is at Ryan S. Starrett on Twitter. The S stands for, so are we going to NFT these memes?
Yeah, no, that's definitely the goal here now.
To the other side of me, giving you that full Fort Payne ASMR, a man who can explain what Ethereum might be. The AU chief.
I did make a hefty sum off an NFT recently.
It's money laundering, right?
It's gambling.
Well, okay. So here's, as they explained to me. So let's say, chief, you have $10,000 cash. Mm-hmm. And I know that, and you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I buy an NFT. And then I agree to sell it to you for 10 grand.
Right.
Knowing that then you can turn around and sell an NFT that has once been valued for 10 grand for even more money, and we split the profits. That's illegal.
It doesn't really work like that from what I've seen. I suppose theoretically you could do that. But the stuff that I have been involved in is it's just, these artists are dropping this thing on this market and you just buy it and then you can flip it for a lot more later on. I guess you could, because basically a lot of money laundering that has happened historically has been in the art dealing world.
This is not technically money laundering, but when I was in high school, two identical twins that went to my school that always had the dopest throwback jerseys were acquiring those throwback jerseys through a pretty hilarious eBay scam that they were running on everybody. So they had two computers set up at their house.
Mm-hmm.
What they would do is they would buy a throwback jersey on eBay. They'd wear it. And then they'd go sell it on eBay. And the other one would bid on it.
Right. To jack up the prices
so that it would finally sell for way above asking. There you go.
Maybe there are some NFT auctions. Generally, there's just a marketplace. And good God, people are going to. Would rather die.
I'm gonna cut this short after about 20 more seconds.
I despise this whole conversation
anyway,
already.
It's just it's a marketplace. You set your price. You put it on there, and somebody can pay it, or they cannot. And then it'll show a floor, like the lowest price listed. And most of them are randomly generated art, and so they're all different. So some of them will sell for more than others, and you just – it's gambling. So you buy one in hopes that you're going to flip it for a lot more money. And I bought one for equivalent of $4 and sold it for $300-something. So.
Nice. Guys, you know, it's not gambling. It's betting on Auburn basketball. Because if you bet that money line on Auburn basketball, chances are you're just going to win.
Not just the money line. Betting on the spread.
Auburn, that's true. Auburn against the spread is pretty good stuff. I watched the Auburn-Florida basketball game. It was one of the first games I've gotten to watch, like, fully start to finish, standing up almost the entire game in my living room, listened to some of it on the radio, some of it just on mute. I like to watch games on mute. I don't know why. That's the best we've looked in 3 years. It was an unbelievable game.
It was fun. It was a fun one to be at. The atmosphere was pretty electric.
Yeah, I mean, it was a common bonding experience, booing the refs just as much as cheering on. Man.
I would say, I'm definitely 100% not blame the refs guy. Because normally, especially in American football, normally bad calls even out over the course of a season. And I guess in basketball it does too. This game.
Yeah, I mean, the number of fouls were fairly even in this game.
Yeah, this game, both teams should have been booing the refs. Like, it was. It was just a poorly officiated game. Not like, oh man, Auburn almost lost because of these refs. No, you could make the case that everyone in the stadium and watching on TV lost because of the refs, because it made the game worse. Yeah, I don't think the win and loss was set
for like half the game because.
Yeah, he played 21 minutes in this game.
Yeah.
21 very frustrating minutes. First
there was just no rhythm.
The first foul call on him, this is no exaggeration. The referee blew the whistle before the guy ever even got to Jabari, and then Jabari did not make contact, and he still called the foul.
Yeah, I think the other wild thing is that it's not a it isn't like Florida could make the case the refs cost them the game.
Right.
The refs were just bad. Like, it was not bad in a cost us the game way. Bad in just a, like, wasn't a foul. And then they would let other stuff go, and guys were getting clobbered, and you're like, what in the world? Like, call something or don't call it, or.
The first half, it was really strange, because overall, they just let them kind of play, because they didn't get. They got to the double bonus like right at the end of the half.
Yeah.
All
right, but before we get into that, and we'll get into that for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's get back on track. Let's go to our first conference win of the week. Since last we talked with you, Auburn beat a number 100, top 100 KenPom team, which I think makes that a quadrant 2 win.
I never can keep track of the quadrants and how those play out.
I have no idea.
It's a good win. We'll just call it a good win.
Auburn beat South Carolina. Auburn went to Columbia.
Oh, right.
Columbia. Okay.
Columbia.
Not the country.
And beat. Yeah. City. Auburn not go a Columbia, but to Columbia, South Carolina. Is there more of a different place in the world than Columbia, the nation, and Columbia, South Carolina?
Or Columbia, Missouri.
Yeah. That's good. I don't know. That's a tie on the running of which is the most. What two plays with the same name are more different?
And then all of those places compared to their namesake from where Christopher Columbus is from,
which is Portugal.
No, he was.
He's Italian.
Italian. That's right.
For Spain.
That's right.
Yeah, because they were trying to compete with the Portuguese.
Yeah,
correct. He went to the Portuguese first, and they didn't want to fund it, so he went to the king. Queen of Espana, who's
Ferdinand and Isabel.
There we go, Isabel. Ferdinand and Isabel.
And then he was like, you know what? I'll do terrible genocide for you guys instead. And they're like, let's make it happen, Captain. Then their daughter marries King Henry VIII, and then he wants to get a divorce.
Mm.
But because the Pope at the time was a Medici, who became Pope, he was very friendly with the Spanish kings, though he was Italian. And that he didn't want to grant an annulment to King Henry VIII. Bingo, bango, bongo.
We'll get the Church of England.
The Church of England. All right. Now, fast forward.
Episcopalians, if you're stateside.
Fast forward a couple hundred years. Auburn beat South Carolina 81-66. I'm sure at some point that's related to King Henry VIII. You never know. Butterfly flaps its wings in Indonesia and we get rain in Seattle. Now, Auburn won three of the four factors. Ryan, why are we so bad at offensive rebounding percentage? That's the one we keep losing.
Our best rebounder is under 6 feet tall. So,
yeah, that's part of it. This one, I mean, it's a loss, but I think it's 1%.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Call it a push. Auburn is not bad on the defensive rebounding end. I mean, keeping most teams around 30% or so or less is not bad. And with, I'm guessing it might be a strategic thing. Auburn's really good in transition defense.
That's what I was going to say. I wonder if we...
So maybe they're getting back and not chasing rebounds much on the offensive glass.
I don't think we crash the offensive glass. I think we take a shot and then we get back on D because we think we'll get a steal and get an easier bucket. I don't know.
It helps us a lot having Walker Kessler get back quickly and not let anybody at the rim.
Right.
So
whereas if you try to crash the glass and then get a transition point, it's tough for a Walker to get all the way down to the other end of the court. It's a long run.
Maybe this isn't related, but I saw something.
Or Dylan Carwell just being unable to make it 94 feet without getting gassed.
Right. Well, somebody called it out on Twitter, maybe during the Florida game or the Carolina game. Can't remember. But it seems like both of Auburn's centers defend fairly high and also or in the offense, you know, further away from the basket.
Yeah.
They're not just, you know, Austin Wiley planted under there trying to get putbacks the whole time. Maybe that's part of it as well, where they're not there as much. It's a trend that hasn't hurt us, and I'm tending to think it's not as emphasized with the way this roster is constructed. So if we keep shooting well, take care of the ball, it's not as big a deal.
Now we shot the absolute lights out with a 58% effective field goal percentage to South Carolina's 49%.
It's incredible.
Remember
when we couldn't shoot on the road? We couldn't buy a bucket on the road. And in several years where we were actually good, we couldn't do it.
Yeah, not anymore.
So, thankfully,
there's so many guys on this team that can play.
Right.
That somebody's going to be hot.
I mean, we've had maybe it might be a different dude every night has been the best player.
To wit, Katie Johnson has had three terrible games up until the Florida game, and it hasn't mattered that our starting two guard has been pretty bad. On offense for three straight games.
And you just bring in Wendell Green off the bench.
Yeah, you got some other guys.
Goes off for 22 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. And it's easy to think, oh, he must have been lights out from three in this game. He only hit 1 of 5 from deep.
No, they couldn't get in front of him. He was unstoppable. They could not guard him.
It's funny to watch now and think about what we were saying early on. In that none of our guards could get to the hole, and then we found out KD could get to the rack, but the other Zepp or Wendell couldn't, and now Wendell's pretty much getting there every game.
I think it's a change in the offensive strategy with him at least, where and I guess like we were discussing before, where Kessler and Cardwell are playing further and further back away from the rim. It's just drawing that defense even more out.
Yeah,
and because Wendell's so fast. They can't catch him if he gets a seam.
Right.
So and Zepp Jasper, who is the least talked about player on this team, starter on this team, is currently on a heater in terms of turnovers that is unbelievable.
Like he had it, well, go ahead.
It is if you look up his assist to turnover ratio or his turnovers per minutes. Those numbers are so bonkers for a guy who is your starting one. It's unbelievable.
And it's one of your best on-ball defenders as well.
Yeah, and is a really good defender. He does not turn the ball over. He's unreal. I think he's my unsung hero of this team because he's not dropping 25 points in a game. But he's also just like, he's doing the things that win you basketball games. Sure. And not doing, more importantly, he's not doing the things that lose you basketball games.
I did find it pretty hilarious last night. After you had pointed this out, I was just paying more attention to it, maybe. He had like four or five different things that should have been turnovers last night. And either somebody else pulled him out of the fire or the ball just bounced the right way and he just happened to get back on it. It was pretty funny.
He's like, allergic to turnovers.
I'm like, wow, the universe really doesn't want this guy to turn the ball over.
No, it's bonkers. No, I love him so much. I think a point guard, the reason why he is starting right now is twofold. I think one, Bruce loves the idea of putting in human diesel fuel, gasoline fire, Wendell Green off the bench. But he also, too, Zepp is just this, like, I'm not turning this ball over. So Bruce knows he's got a steady hand at point guard who can set up the rest of the team really, really well. Like, he's not going to make a pass like Sharif where he throws an alley-oop from the timeline to the other timeline. But he's also not going to force a pass that's not there like we saw Wendell do a couple times just like because it could be rad if the guy gets it. Like, you know what I mean? Yeah. There are some times where Wendell will throw a pass where like, it'd be sick if this guy catches this.
Yeah.
Zed doesn't do that.
Yeah, well, in the Florida game, he threw an oop from past half court to Devin Cambridge.
I think that's true.
Which, in Auburn Arena, place goes wild. It's a huge momentum swing. Right. It's awesome. You do that on the road, it could be disastrous.
Right. Yeah.
All right. But yeah. Zed doesn't do that. He takes care of the ball, and it's a different feel because as long as we've all been big Auburn basketball fans, and Auburn's been good the last couple of years, and it's been because Bruce has a flashy point guard who might go off for 30 in a night. Jared Harper, Javon and Samir, Sharif last year. That's not what this team needs because there's extremely talented scorers all over the court. Yeah. So just having a guy that you can trust to get the ball to them is all you need.
So here's my Zepp Jasper analogy. Chief, you'll appreciate this a lot, I think. Ryan, who's the best soccer player in the world?
Either Ronaldo or Messi. Is that the right answer?
Sure. Good answer. What if I told you that there is a really good case to be made for a person you may have never heard of named N'Golo Kanté? Do you know who that is?
I feel like that name's come up in stuff I've ignored you guys talking about.
So N'Golo Kanté is a central midfielder for Chelsea.
Formerly of Leicester City.
He is unfathomably good at what he does. He is not Messi or Ronaldo because he doesn't score a ton of goals.
One of the worst fantasy players you can have.
Yeah, he doesn't score a ton of goals, doesn't get a bunch of assists, but he wins people trophies. Him being on your team, you have a really good shot of winning a trophy. Zepp Jasper is that type of player. He's not doing the things that are like going to get on SportsCenter, but having him on your team wins trophies. Having Ronaldo on your team oftentimes does not win anything. He might score some sweet free kicks.
If you're Argentina, having Messi on your team wins you nothing.
That's true. Well, he wins you the Copa America. But like, you get N'Golo Kanté on your team, you can build everything around him because the middle of the field is set. You get a Zepp Jasper, you can start doing other crazy stuff because the starting one is going to not lose you this basketball game.
The one thing I would like for him to do is just take the ball at the floor, though.
He's not, he does it, he's okay against the press. I know what
Wendell's
you mean.
Wendell's not awesome at it.
Wendell's
like,
really bad at getting trapped.
He goes to the corner. His move is to go to the corner.
It's not.
I don't understand what that
is. It's unconscionable against the full court press.
Like, and almost everyone that touches the ball on that side of the floor wants to like go in an angle, like they're doing dribbling drills, and it drives me insane.
No,
Just go.
Against Florida, they try to full court press, and it killed me because Wendell would get the ball and go straight to the worst part of the court to go
like,
to.
What are you doing?
Where Florida is trying to get you to go. Zepp doesn't, you know what Zepp doesn't do? He didn't turn the ball over in that full court press.
He doesn't turn
over. He got it across that court.
He'll get a 10-second call before he gets he turns that ball over. That's
it's unreal. Sure. All right, let's keep going with South Carolina. So Alan Flanagan did not play in this game. And that's notable not only because we won the game again without Allen. Alan Flanagan needs to get in shape.
Yep.
Not like he's fat. Alan Flanagan needs to get in game shape. He has not played enough minutes of basketball. Against Alabama, we're going to need Alan Flanagan. And he played a good chunk of time against Florida, but you could tell he was a little gassed too. And part of that is he's not in game shape. Game shape is not the same thing as practice shape. I loved Kessler against South Carolina. Another double-double. He's just unbelievable.
Just a bad night defending the rim with four blocks.
Yeah, four blocks. If you average four blocks a game, you are one of the best shot blockers on the planet. And that's what he's doing. How many is he actually averaging now?
Right around that, I think. Let's see. Blocks per game, 4.1.
This game, similar to the Florida game, you really could make the case that it was won by the bench, Auburn's bench. So, again, our starting two guard up until the Florida game had three bad games. The best player in America, Jabari Smith, has had a couple of off nights in a row now.
Yeah.
In terms of offensively or just not having the rhythm. Auburn
2-0. Not like disastrous nights.
Still scoring double digits in all of those games.
And stopping runs and just putting daggers on
He teams. Was a +8 against Florida, but it felt like he was a +25 because it felt like when he was off the floor, they were making runs. And when he came back on the floor, the runs ended. But against South Carolina, Auburn's bench scored 40 of its 81 points.
Yeah, they had scored 27 points in the first, 12 minutes of the game or something crazy like that.
And a lot of that was Wendell. I mean, I think he had 6 points in, the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, Wendell had double digits in the first half.
But Jalen Williams looked really good in this game. He had 6 points and 2 rebounds, but a monster dunk. I think was number 2 on –
Yeah,
top 10 player Sports Center that night.
Yeah.
It boggles my mind that he's having to come off the bench on this team. Obviously behind Jabari Smith, that's why. But he's still showing he's one of the he's one of the best power forwards Auburn's had, and he's not Jabari, but he can do everything. He can go to the rim, like I saw in that dunk. Had a great game against Florida with a 4-point play when Jabari had his fouls and everything. He's probably going to be a starting power forward again next year for his senior year. And he's, just extremely impressed with the way he's been playing in SEC play this year.
His dunks are the best because he is the most unassuming guy that's ever played for Auburn, I think, and just busts out these insane dunks. And he is always trying to dunk on someone, which is always my favorite.
Yeah.
Was it this game or the LSU game? He tried the backboard dunk again.
That was LSU. Didn't work
from
out.
The Tennessee game.
Yeah.
Yeah. He tried it again. Didn't quite work, but I love seeing him bust it out though.
Yeah. That we'll get to it when we get to Florida, but this game, and then he's on a little bit of a run here where he's had pretty solid games. We've talked about the bench. When you can have that coming off the bench, it makes you really hard to beat. I think.
He's like, Jalen Williams is a all-SEC caliber player on five or six teams in this conference coming off the bench. Like, and not coming off, and not like I'm like, play Jalen more. No, he's coming off the bench because Jabari's a better player than him. But Jalen Williams will be a professional basketball player in 2 years. Minimum. Maybe sure. Maybe next year. He might just decide after this year he can go play in Europe or in the G League. And he can. He's that good of a player. But to have that type of player coming off your bench is unreal. Auburn is killing teams right now from inside the three-point line. Took only 13 threes against Alabama, against South Carolina. Ryan has here is the fewest attempted threes since the 2017 Iron Bowl of basketball. Yeah, this is not the same Bruce Pearl Auburn team that just hammers it from three. They can. I think if teams stack the paint, this Auburn team, I mean, Zepp is shooting over 40% from three. This Auburn team is happy to just chunk, but I think they don't have to. Auburn, I mean, South Carolina, Florida, and now Alabama are not good teams defending the two. They're all three really good at three-point defense. So I wonder if Auburn is just like, let's just take it to the rack every single time or put it down low or get out and run.
In conference play so far, just to prove your point, Auburn is shooting 39% from three as a team. Great. They're 12th in the conference in three-point attempt rate.
Yeah, we've got one of the best fives in the country down there in Walker Kessler. But then we also have Jabari, who loves the good old 18-footer. Especially which you know is a little bit inside the three and doesn't count as much, but if you can make them shoot them.
I've come off the KD Kevin Durant comparisons with Jabari
because he doesn't get to the rack.
He's feeling more like Dirk at this point to me.
A little bit.
And as a Mavericks fan, I don't say that lightly at all. He is the GOAT. But him getting the ball at the elbow and with his back to the basket and then turn around, knee over. Up, fade away, that's Dirk Nowitzki. Jabari.
Yeah, well, games, you saw him late in the shot clock where the offense didn't really look like it had look it wanted or whatever. So 8 seconds left, dump it to Jabari. Even when he's not already at the shoulder, he could back guys to it and then just go up over him.
Yeah, he loves the elbow.
If they defended it well, he doesn't matter.
I love a good elbow shot, too.
He loves the elbow.
I respect it.
He is an elbow jumper waiting to happen. And like I said last week, he has six or seven spots on the floor. And nobody can stop him from getting to those spots.
Yeah.
And until somebody does, he's just going to, I'm going to go to one of my spots and shoot from here. Every one of his shots come from six or seven spots.
I think that comparison's good because it just – KD – especially at Texas, used to get to the hole.
He would dunk get down every
and
then, time.
Yeah, just dunk on everybody, and that's not Jabari's game, clearly. And you know, maybe he has it. We just haven't seen it because he hasn't had to do it. He'd done that one dunk, and it was spectacular. But he'd rather just shoot it.
Yeah.
And you know what? He's less likely to get fouled out there, and just he's gonna make it. Almost half the time. So
he's a better defender than Dirk. Dirk's a little bit better three-point shooter, but it's unbelievable. Right. And Dirk's about 2 inches taller. But it's an unbelievable. To have an offensive player like that on your team is pretty – it's wild. And Auburn beat number 34 in KenPom, Florida, which that's got to be a quad one win, but no one knows how those quads work.
Yeah.
85-73 and only won one of the four factors –
dominated it.
Yeah, because sure. Auburn shot 61% in the effective field goal percentage.
If you can win that one by that much, then you're going to win the game no matter what, usually. So,
got out-rebounded on the offensive glass again pretty badly this time, 26% to 18%.
You don't need offensive rebounds if you don't miss shots.
That's true. Auburn turned the ball over at a higher percentage. That doesn't feel right, but I know it. No, it's right.
Turnovers are bad.
I know Wendell turned the ball over a lot.
Yeah.
This is the second game we played all year with our actual full roster.
It's true.
Yep.
Wow.
And it made some strange lineups.
Real weird.
And some of that was the fouls. Some of that was trying
a
to
lot play. Of it was the fouls.
I mean, Auburn, Bruce, especially into conference play, never plays 11 guys. It's usually you're kind of going down to 10 or 9. But Chris Moore, I mean, he's earning his minutes. Leor Berman earning minutes. So the depth is only going to help, especially as guys like Flanagan are, you know, knocking off the rust, getting back into the swing of things. And when you have nights where Walker Kessler picks up fouls, you know, correctly called or not, he played, somehow still played 24 minutes in this game. It's interesting. But Cambridge only got to play 17. Zepp only played 21. Jabari only played 21.
Jabari, I would love to know the actual time of the time that he sat in the second half to start out, because he got his third foul like right at the beginning.
Almost immediately.
Yeah.
Within the first minute of the second half.
And then Bruce took him out. And then he sat for, because of how many fouls were being called up until that under 12 timeout.
He got put back in at the same time as Walker did. And then Walker picked that up and Bruce pulled them both back out because he couldn't afford to have them both with four fouls.
So I felt like he sat from that moment to the under 12 timeout.
I'm pulling up Ferg's rotation chart.
And
it was a long time. He was sitting over there a long time. I kind
of
worried.
And because of the way that fouls were being called, it may have only been like 4 minutes of game time. But so I think it was like 25 minutes of real time.
So Jabari didn't play the last 5 minutes of the first half, played the first minute of the second half, and then did not check back in until, I believe, around the 9-minute mark in the game.
And then checked out immediately after that.
So he played.
No. I mean, he may have gone in a stint around 12 or 13, but didn't really get recorded.
So 9. Okay.
He didn't even, there was no play. Like, he checked in.
Right. And that doesn't show up in the rotation.
He got the foul, and then they pulled.
Yeah.
So he went from.
He effectively played 10 minutes. One of a 15 minute stretch.
So he played 10 minutes.
Including halftime.
10 game minutes he was sitting, which was probably
40.
Yeah, 25, 30 minutes.
It was a long, long game.
And Auburn did
that's
not.
That's a long time to sit. Like, people.
Yeah.
You get stiff over there. It'll be bad.
He didn't
show it when he came back in.
We didn't relinquish the lead. In fact, I mean, the lead got down to 1 by the time he got back in the game, which he put a stop to immediately with a just stone-cold three-pointer that just was. Man. He has a knack for hitting the three-point shot to end runs.
Yeah.
Like, even when he's having a pretty rough night, he's just like, okay, these idiots are not going to come back and take the lead in this game. I'm going to hit a three here, and then we're going to stop, and that's going to be it.
He hit that shot, and, like, I don't think anyone in that building thought that the game wasn't over at that point. That was it.
If you notice,
what ended up happening was he hit that three. The next possession was KD hitting that step back three.
Mm-hmm.
The next possession, Wendell hits three.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, if you look at the play by play, KD Johnson had 23 points in this game. A lot of them came after that three by Jabari. For whatever reason, that three flipped the switch in KD Johnson's brain that made him go Super Saiyan on the offensive end.
Mm.
And then it was just, I'm taking it to the bucket every time, or I'm hitting step back threes. KD Johnson was unbelievable.
Don't get the ball in KD's hands, because it's, you're not getting it back unless you're down low and he's passing it to you down there.
Right.
Like,
he is a black hole on offense. That's a fact. He doesn't get a lot of assists.
I mean, he's always looking for somebody else. It's just, you know, most of the time, once he gets down in there in the paint, he's the best option.
Nobody's playing as fast as him. He's seeing the game at a different level.
That's right.
Jalen had 14 and 3, 2 big blocks, had a 4-point play.
Big game for Jalen. He He was Jeremy Golson's man of the match after that one.
Ryan here has it. He had a 92% effective field goal percentage. That's bananas.
He missed one shot.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was it.
Yep. 5 of 6 from the floor. He missed a three of three from the free throw line.
Incredible night for Jalen.
Yeah. Jabari with the quietest 13 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists game you'll ever see.
It is just insane how he still gets his numbers, and they're not. It's not like garbage garbage time points or whatever. He's making a contribution even when the game did not go especially well for him. He's still, the third key player probably.
And I think we also need to give Florida credit. They had one guy that Auburn, either because of referees or because of talent, could not defend. Castleton was, we had nothing for him. Once Kessler was saddled with his fourth.
I'd like to mention that. They called the just non-foul on Kessler for that one. Not a foul. Not even close. He didn't touch him. Didn't touch him. No one touched
him. I think Lior touched him, and they called it on that was when I was like, wait a minute, that's fouls on Lior Bormann. That should not have been on Walker Kessler.
They tried to get him to look at it. They wouldn't look at it. Kessler fouls, and then after that, I mean, they're like, everyone was just afraid to do anything down there. I mean, they'd already been pretty spooked trying to play. But anyway, I can't remember who ends up guarding him the very next play after Kessler gets the Phantom 3, and they just maul the dude, like completely maul him. They don't call it a thing, and I'm like, really?
It was
like,
Cambridge. I think Devin Cambridge hit him like it was with a nightstick.
Just like, yeah.
There was no call.
Rodney King beating out there, and he's just like, they don't call anything? What are you doing?
And then Auburn had to put Cardwell on Castleton. And it was like, I mean, it was like Castleton was putting his third graders. Like, it was bad. And this is a pro Dylan Cardwell podcast. But it was a rough go.
Cardwell was kind of beating on him a little bit and just still wasn't having an effect.
He was turnovers, left shoulder, buckets, turnovers, right shoulder, buckets, hook shot, bucket. 22
the guy
points.
Was just able to get space on Dylan with those turnarounds, and he just couldn't do anything about it.
22 points, 10 rebounds for Castleton. He was 8 for 11 from the free throw line. He was single-handedly keeping Florida in this basketball game, because if he doesn't go on that crazy run in the second half, Auburn runs him out of the gym.
Yeah. A lot of that was the referees really helped out with that.
Until the under 9 timeout. For whatever reason, after that second TV timeout, it was the game was officiated in a completely different manner.
Totally different.
I said that in the Slack. I go, watch, they're gonna just stop calling fouls.
Because they had called at one point they had called two fouls a minute at one point with
the first 4 minutes before the first TV timeout, 10 fouls were called.
Yeah. At 6 minutes, they called 12.
Auburn was in the
or 13.
Florida
was in the bonus.
In the second half, I think 15 minutes left in the half.
Yeah. Florida's in the bonus with 15 left in the half.
Six minutes in, they had called 13 fouls.
It was the most brutally officiated. Like every game, every trip down the court was a whistle, and it was just staccato. Like there was no rhythm to the game.
The last 5 minutes, I think they called two fouls.
Right. One on each team. That second TV timeout, all of a sudden, it was just like, oh, better quit blowing. We ran up all the fouls. It was almost like they were told, you call a total of this many fouls this game, and they ran out of them. We got no fouls left to call. Let them play.
Well, I'll tell you what happened in that second half. They called that first half pretty loose. Pretty even. I mean, there were some really bad fouls called, especially on Jabari and Walker. But for the most part, they let guys play. Florida's coach drug Doug Shouse to the side on the way in from the locker room and, like, was doing the, like, ball over his face, talking to him, like, so the camera couldn't see, like hiding his face, and he lit into him. And so then they come out and they call a bunch of fouls.
Everything.
Like, and I don't know why a coach would – I mean, I'm sure that wasn't his goal to get them to call that many fouls that quickly. But it had an effect. And, you know, we've talked about it here before. The refs do this crap where they'll call – it'll be – fouls will be 7-2, and they'll be like, oh, crap. And suddenly they'll just stop calling fouls on one team and call a bunch on the other team. Like, that makes up for the crappy – situation they did before, when in fact it just evens out to crap for both teams.
Yeah.
So it's just I don't know. Referees are bad. It's a tough job. I get it. I wouldn't want to do it, but
it's not that tough. I mean, it's a tough job, but it's not as tough as they make it look like.
Well, it's,
the main
it's
thing
tough.
Is,
it, I think it's tough tougher now than it used to be at that level because the game's faster. I think that
it's
that
a
way
tough
in
job.
Football and basketball.
It's a tough job. Basketball more than football has judgment calls. Almost every call is a judgment call in basketball.
Right.
And that makes it tough. And then the players are fast and these guys are incompetent. But also, like, they want it to be about them. Like, more than football has. Like, football does not have a bunch of referees who are trying to make the game. Like, I could not tell you five SEC football officials' names.
I just know the guy that looks like my wife's uncle.
But there's a lot of people
it's
who
the worst
watch.
Group, yeah.
If you watch a ton of college basketball, like, I bet Will McLaughlin could name you five collegiate basketball refs off the top of his head.
Well, very easily. Part of that is probably because all the refs are national, so they're like on TV. TV Teddy is on TV every night of the week, bro.
Yep. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about next week. We are back. With 40 minutes and 58 seconds elapsed in this podcast, we appreciate you listening all the way through to the end.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Next week, this coming week, Tuesday night, we're recording this on Sunday, so that you can listen to this as a preview for the game Tuesday night, the Iron Bowl of basketball.
On your drive to hell.
Or you just fly into the hangar.
It's called the Highway to Hell, Chief.
Okay.
Yeah. ACDC loves 82. Tuscaloosa, Alabama. number 17, Alabama, who may not be number 17 by the time that game is played.
That's 17 in KenPom, by the way. Not,
okay. This game is set up for Auburn to lose. However, I am not going to be one of those sad sack Auburn fans who's like, "Oh man, karma, we're going to lose because we were so mean to everybody on
we're
Twitter."
We're going to sweep this team this year. They suck. Let's go.
That's what I'm talking about.
They lost to Missouri this week.
Yeah, they lost to Mizzou, who is
lost
terrible.
To Memphis too, right?
Well, Memphis turned out to be pretty good.
Memphis still lost to Georgia, though.
Yeah, they're still coached by Penny Hardaway. They're not that good.
This Alabama team has just the wildest schedule so far. So they're fifth in the country in strength schedule. They scheduled really hard this year. And they've got some good wins. They've got wins over Gonzaga.
I believe that's a
two in KenPom.
That's a way hard schedule.
Way hard, yeah.
Is that right, Chief?
Yes, way hard. Correct.
They beat number 2 Gonzaga, number 3 Houston, number 14 Tennessee, number 34 Florida, and lost to four teams worse than that.
Yeah.
Number 35 Memphis, number 47 Davidson, number 95 Iona, Rick Pitino's own, and number 148 Mizzou.
148?
That's after they beat Bama, though. So when they lost to them, they were worse than 148.
That's a quad 9 loss.
Yeah, I mean,
is that how quadrants work?
I think this team is, you know, capable. They're talented. They're supposedly well coached. But Auburn's going to win this game. I look. If we don't, it's not my fault for saying we're going to win if they do. So I'm not worried about that.
Oh, so I'm the only one that can curse teams?
You are. You are the only one that can curse.
Ain't no curses, Ryan. Number one, Auburn is better than Alabama at the four factors. Better at 50, sure. Better effective field goal percentage.
Mm-hmm.
Better turnover percentage. Better offensive rebound percentage. They actually rebound worse than us on the offensive glass. The only one we're not as good at is what we call free throw rate. The free throw ratio, they are just a hair, a frog's hair, better than us at that.
That means they stink at it, too.
Yeah. I do want it to be clear what you're looking at, Kurt. This is the Auburn offense and Bama defense matchup.
Oh, my bad. I am doing this
wrong. Because there's technically eight factors if you do.
Yeah, both sides of the court. Sure. This is confusing me. We also
have a much better coach and a much better dressing coach as well.
So you're telling me that based on this, that Auburn is better than their defense allows at the four factors?
Bama's defense allows, this is, for example,
intentionally misleading, Ryan. That's what I think this is.
Look, it's titled Auburn offense versus Bama defense.
Sure.
What we're supposed to read?
Yeah.
I'll do pictures next time. How about that?
There we go.
Four factors, and you give me eight lines. No, this is my fault. So, I believe this is a really good defensive team.
Yes. They're a better offensive team. This Alabama, the last couple of years, has been a really good defensive team that hits threes. And kind of not that this year. And I'm going to go ahead and do it, Chief. Sorry.
No. Ryan. You already spoke it into existence last night.
And guess what, Chief? We're 14-1.
Peacock, Ryan. Tell them how bad they are.
This is just it's a really weird split in their shooting, and maybe it's because it's not a well-coached team.
It could be. Ryan.
So no, he's a great coach. He's going to be Maryland's next head coach. He's awesome.
Sure. They are 40th in the country in effective field goal percentage on their offense, right? It's pretty good. Yeah, not bad.
Mm-hmm.
From two, they're 58%. That's good for eighth in the country. They're really good at going to the rim. But they're 326th in two-point attempt rate. So of all of their shots, 55% are twos, 45% are threes. That is a very, very low amount of twos.
So you're telling me they're really good at shooting twos.
They just don't do it.
Don't do it.
For comparison, from three, they're shooting 33% as a team. That's good for 212th in the country.
See, they seem like a team that should shoot more twos than threes.
They should because Crow,
they're shooting 33%. That's horrible.
Right? What's the old formula? It's three. You should be 1.5 times.
You should be one and a half times better
because to keep up with the threes,
right?
And they are not.
No, they're way worse than that. If they're shooting that good at two, you should not take almost any threes.
Yeah. It's going to be a problem for them, too, unless they can get Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith into foul trouble if they're trying to take a lot of twos against us.
Because what was their two-point percentage? Was they take
53%?
58%. So let's call it 60%. So you're making 6 out of every 10 times you shoot, which is good for 12 points. To score 12 points, how many threes do you have to make? 4. So you have to shoot over 40% from three as a team to do better than that. And you're not. That's tough to shoot over 40% as a team. I mean, Auburn's doing it, but not everybody's able to do that.
Is this just because John Petty's no longer there that they can't shoot three?
He's not?
They just lost their identity. No John Petty anymore.
What?
No, I could have sworn. I thought
he had a lifetime contract.
Been there for about 8 years.
I mean, he had a pretty good contract, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So they are.
It was charged, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, man. They played only 8 guys. J.D. Davidson's really, really good. We talk a lot of crap, but he may be the best freshman point guard in America. And will probably be a first round draft pick in June. He's really, really good. I like his game a lot.
He's not playing point guard for this team, though.
Sure.
He's playing three for this team.
Yeah, I like his game a lot. I think he's a really good player. Who's playing point guard for them?
That would be Javon Quinterly.
Quinterly.
Sure. Yeah, no. Shackleford's playing two.
Shackleford's playing three.
Davidson's really, really good. I like Davidson a ton. Quinterly's good too. I mean, he's not a bad player by any means, but in terms of,
falls into that same mold of Kira Lewis,
right?
Which, yeah, you guys made fun of me for being down on him. He's a good point guard.
Guard. He doesn't stink.
Got a very high usage rate, and he's not that efficient. Well, he's probably going to score 15, 20 points. Yeah, that happened, you know, whatever. But it's going to take a lot of shots and keep the ball out of guys like J.D. Davison's hands.
Davidson's really good. He's, if you want to look at your like NBA preview, Davidson versus Jabari is the one. I'll tell you this: Kira Lewis is good enough that he is being paid $4 million by the New Orleans Pelicans this year, and he's actually really good.
Got paid at Alabama.
It's way more than. Nope, they're not paying $4 million to a basketball player.
An inefficient basketball player, for sure.
No, Kira Lewis is a really good NBA player. He's going to end up being okay. He's going to end up being better. He's going to end up being better in Colin Sexton in the NBA.
Wow.
Yeah. That's my hot. I'm going to go on that limb that Kira Lewis is a better NBA player. They have a high tempo. That's a classic Nate Oates team. They're going to get up and down really, really quick. I actually like that for Auburn because, although, if the referees officiate it like they did against Florida, no one will be high tempo. But also, right. Katie Johnson will foul out in the first half.
Well, hopefully the fact that there's two NBA players facing off in this game, we won't have both of them get a bunch of fouls called on them real quickly because maybe the refs will realize that people pay good money to come see those people play. I don't know.
Yeah. I think I'm interested to see how Katie Johnson handles the fact that Bama is going to try to go up and down the court as fast as possible. He seems to thrive on that mm-hmm. chaos.
Yeah, he loves chaos.
If you try to implement chaos on your end, he will counter it with just a tsunami of chaos.
Yeah, he's low-key.
Exactly. He feeds off of it. They're a really good shooting team. I don't know, man. I actually think they're a really good basketball team. They had some weird losses. I think Auburn's going to smoke them, though, at their place. You have here as the best player is Quinterly, and I would agree with you. I think Davidson's their best prospect.
For sure.
But Quinterly's their best player.
Quinterly's the guy that most of their offense runs through. I mean, he's got the highest usage rate. He's second in team in scoring. He's a guy you're going to have to lock down if you want to win this game.
Sounds like maybe they're not that deep, though. Is that a good assumption?
Yeah, I mean, they don't really play. Their bench minutes are like 250th in the country.
Yeah, it's not deep at all then.
Right. The one thing I am worried about is that they are pretty good on the offensive glass. They're rebounding 35% on offense as a team. Both Juwan Gary and Charles Bediako, they're starting 4 and 5, are 12%, which is really, really good. Mm-hmm. So if they end up taking a lot of twos, which they haven't so far this year, not only are they going to make a lot of them, but they're going to be rebounding them at a high rate.
Are either one of those guys the kind of guys that are going to give Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith trouble?
Bediako, he's a bigger guy. He's seven. He's a 7-footer, 7'2", 225. He could. I mean, he's. I don't know. I've been struggling the last 2 weeks or so of seeing these bigger guys say, "Oh, like you know." I'm drawing a blank on his name, the guy at UConn who just tore him apart.
Yeah.
Well, it seemed like that happened more at the beginning of the year for Walker, and it hasn't really happened a ton. Like, Walker played well against Colin Castleton in the Florida game.
Sure.
Now, he had the fouls. He didn't get to be on the court as much, which is where Castleton racked up all his second-half points. I'm seeing Bediako, and I don't know. I don't want to fall into the trap of saying – that thing I saw at the beginning of the year is going to keep happening. Sure. Don't think it is.
Okay. Well, Kessler's he's not a banger. He's not going to win a ton of physical battles. The way he blocks shots is not like right on top of somebody. He kind of comes across like from a little bit further away from him to swat those away. But also his the way he beats guys is his quickness, because he's quicker than most of the big guys that he plays against. You know, I don't know if either one of these guys, you said that guy's a 7-footer, so that'll be an interesting matchup to watch. I don't know if he's a more physical guy or a quicker guy.
Yeah, but both Bediako and Gary, that's the power forward, smaller guys, 6'6". But their usage rate is fairly low on the team as well. So it could be something Nato tries to do in this game, but up to this point, he is not. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Yeah, we want them to just shoot as many threes as they can, right?
Are you going to get mad at me if they make them?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it's clearly your fault.
Can we talk about Ole Miss?
Sure.
No, we're still in Alabama.
All right, let's talk about Ole Miss. On Saturday, Auburn travels to another top 100 KenPom team, the Ole Miss Running Rebels. A team that has had Auburn's number in their barn for as long as Kermit has been there. Like, has Auburn beaten them at Ole Miss under him?
Yeah, we won last year, right? I think we beat them last year. That was the first time you'd beaten Kermit.
But even back into the Andy Kennedy years, Auburn didn't play well at the Pavilion.
This is it. This is the retribution tour that Auburn's currently on. One in South Carolina. We're going to win at Coleman and then just hammer this not good Ole Miss team.
Yeah. I think that's right, because this we've already discussed how this team doesn't really play like Bruce's teams have in the past. So they're not going to have trouble with anything Kermit can throw at them.
They have not played any. They ain't played nobody. Ole Miss ain't played nobody.
And they're 9-5.
They beat Memphis twice?
No, sorry.
You have him. Did they beat 35 Memphis, 41 Mississippi State?
41 Mississippi State, and that would be.
I thought maybe you liked their win over Memphis so good that you put it on there two times.
Yeah, number 97. Number 97, Dayton. Sorry.
Dayton, the Flyers.
How is Memphis 35 in KenPom?
Because they've been tearing it up since they lost Alabama. Or since they lost to Georgia, I mean. They were like, oh, let's play good basketball. We have a bunch of five stars.
So they won on a stretch of losing to Iowa State, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Murray State 4 in a row, and then beat Alabama, beat a top 100 Wichita State team, beat a top 100 Cincinnati team.
Yeah, they've played good basketball. All right, they figured out they have a top 100 roster. And so, but this Ole Miss team has lost to Tennessee, who should be tried for crimes against offensive basketball on several occasions.
Rick Barnes.
I watched some of their game last night, and it was unwatchable. That Tennessee team will go stretches where you're like, has anybody played this game before?
Maybe this is a subject for a different time, but are Tennessee fans satisfied with Rick Barnes?
I mean, they're a top 14 KenPom team. I don't understand how.
He's never going to win them anything, though. Because it's just terrible.
They won a co-SEC championship one year, Chief.
Oh, well, that's true. That's
true. I'm sure you could give them a player like Kevin Durant, and they could get to the second round of the tournament.
That's right. They could go to the second round. They could be the first weekend.
Maybe Justin Powell was that key for them this year. Maybe they can get to the second weekend with him.
I think
Justin Powell is more of a Klay Thompson type, I believe.
That's right. But I also think that Chief made as many threes in their last game
everybody to be aware of that reference.
I wrote an article.
He looked great.
His first five games were identical stats-wise to Klay Thompson's first five games at Washington State. Since then, it has not been good for Justin Powell. Because once Auburn started playing real teams, it was not good for Justin Powell. I think...
Well, he didn't play.
He did play.
It's like the third conference game?
Yeah. His first two conference games were not great.
Didn't he play the point in one of those, though?
In one of those.
And he Auburn was playing fans, the point in all of those.
In all of them. Auburn fans weren't really ready to see how bad he was. Yeah, because he was kind of the darling.
Certain co-host of this podcast.
No, I knew he was bad at that point, too. But Auburn Twitter, and I remember because I even made the comment, like, what are we going to do when he's not that good?
After you called him Klay Thompson.
Right, because Auburn Twitter had basically adopted him as a son.
Look, maybe the head injury has really affected him.
Yeah, he's still dealing with it. I heard he got a head injury a different place. To be honest with you.
I mean, I still think he can't go outside, so.
Yeah, right. He's as pale as those white uniforms they were wearing. That was weird. I didn't realize he had red hair.
Maybe it's new. New year, new him. Ole Miss is pretty meh.
Yeah. Seems that way.
On offense? Yeah.
I mean, wins over 35, 41, and 97 in KenPom are not bad.
It's losing to
number 24
friends in Birmingham, Samford. Yeah.
Well, they love to lose to FCS schools, so Ole Miss does. They've lost to Samford in basketball. They lost to Jacksonville State in football. So
this is it, man. We're beating the smoke out of Ole Miss.
She's going to beat the brakes off of them?
Yeah.
So they're 167th in KenPom on offense. They're not, like, bad at anything, but they're not good at anything either. I mean, they're just like in the mid hundreds in most stats. The weird thing is their shooting stats as a team aren't great, but they've got three really good 3-point shooters in Jamin Brakefield, Luis Rodriguez, and Ty Fagan, all over 40% on like decent volume. I don't know why they're not leaning on them more. Haven't watched a ton of Ole Miss basketball to find out why. Ty Fagan has been the point guard most of the year, but former Auburn commit Deshaun Ruffin, if you remember that name, is now their starting point guard from the last
year. Is he related to Nick Ruffin?
He is not, as far as I know. Oh, okay. Freshman point guard. He had broken his hand at the beginning of the season, which is why he missed a couple games. Small dude, and I'm sure Bruce would have loved to have had him. A 5'9 point guard is right up Bruce's alley. He's got a just absurd assist rate. That's in his six games played this year. He's got a 37% assist rate and draws 7.5 fouls a game. We'll see how Zepp and KD and Wendell guard him. Ole Miss as a team is a fairly big team, but having a guy listed at 5'9 means he's probably not 5'9.
Correct. I mean, they famously had for what seemed like 18 years the really super short point guard. And this is back when the baggy shorts were still a thing, so it looked like he was wearing pants most games.
Yes,
had a high top fade, light skinned guy, was maximum of 5'8", probably more like 5'7", 5'6". He was really short. Don't remember his name,
guys. And that about has it. That about does it for this podcast. She doesn't remember this guy's name. I don't remember anything but Marshall Henderson when it comes to Ole Miss.
Wow, wait, hold on. One second. I'm looking at the notes. They have a 7-foot point or center too?
Yeah. Both teams this week had some big boys.
Where are all these 7-foot centers coming from?
We've got our own, it's fine.
It's fine. Yeah, okay. We not only have our own, we have another guy who's almost 7 feet who plays two guard for us. I guess that's the way it works at Auburn now. KD, and we got another guy like who's almost 7 feet who doesn't ever play at all.
That's true. Stretch. Yeah. KD plays like he's 7 feet tall.
Yeah. KD
plays like he thinks he's 7 feet tall. Yeah.
And has he also a plays 7-foot wingspan.
Yeah. KD plays like when he stomps the ground, he thinks he's actually going to crack the court in half. he might one of these days. The way he stomps, it's amazing.
Yeah, I can't get over his celebration, like running down the court, arms locked straight down, jumping as high as he can,
bobbing his head, and then he's like, "Oh wait, I got to play defense." It's great. I watch for it every time.
It's the most anime. It is anime. He is celebrating like he's in Dragon Ball Z, and he thinks everything around him is turning purple, and he's becoming full of lightning. And it's just going to just break the court in half and go into a different realm.
It's great. I love it. I love every bit of it.
He's a Mortal Kombat character who plays for Auburn. It's the best. All right. We'll see you guys next week after Auburn goes 2-0. We're new thing this year, guys. We are overconfident.
Yeah.
Barnhart.
Because here's the opposite. The opposite is being the, oh, I don't want to say it. What if it's a problem? And then we win, and you look back at, man, I should have been more confident in that. That's lame. I'd rather be overconfident and lose than underconfident and win and have regret over not barning too hard.
Yeah. Hey, look, so, we were
Carter, are you telling me to buy some Final Four tickets? Is that what you're doing?
Do it, buddy. You can flip them either way. That's actually a really good investment.
You know what you can't flip? Your hotel room.
No.
Because they're non-refundable, and they're $800 a night.
Keep those bad boys. Don't buy those yet, but buy your Final Four tickets.
Yeah. Earlier this week, I thought I had found a good deal on an Airbnb in New Orleans for that week that had cancelable up until that week. And did a little more digging, and not the best place. South 7th Ward, you know.
Or maybe the best place.
Well, stay in Biloxi, folks.
All right. We'll see you guys next week. Have a worry good weekend.
Keep those cameras rolling.